This is Bobby Guy with the 10-Minute Health Bizcast. We are broadcasting and recording live today as part of the 2020 Healthcare Dealmakers Digital Experience. This is a fun and exciting day for the 10-Minute Health Bizcast. Today, we get to interview the winners of the pitch competition at the annual Healthcare Dealmakers Conference in Dallas. We have the 2020, 2019, and 2017 winners, and we get to talk about what their companies are doing to make healthcare better. Our guests today are Amy Furch of Ataya Medical, the 2020 competition winner, Dr. Lindsay Harper of Rosie, the 2019 pitch competition winner, and Maria Schneider of DynoFit, the 2017 winner. Our 2018 winner was not able to be with us today, but we anticipate a future episode of the Health Bizcast with them at some point in the next few months. So we're going to talk to each company in order, and we're open for audience questions throughout. Amy, why don't we start with you? Amy Furch is the co-founder and COO of Ataya Medical, a med device startup empowering patients with the freedom to speak. She oversees the quality and manufacturing of their SpeakX communication system. She graduated from Georgia Tech in 2017 with a BS in biomedical engineering. Fun fact, she's also an escape room obsessive, having completed about 50 escape rooms in 10 different cities, including some virtual ones during the quarantine. Amy, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Excited to be here.
So, Amy, tell us about Ataya Medical and what it does.
Yeah, so at Ataya, we have created a universal retrofittable communication aid for patients that have to wear hard plastic masks in the clinical setting. So this is primarily people that arrive at the hospital with any sort of breathing issue. The first line of treatment is to fit you with this non-invasive ventilation mask. It's really similar to a CPAP mask. It's hard plastic. It fully covers your mouth and nose and creates a physical communication barrier between you and the outside world. So we've created the Speaks, which is a two-part system consisting of a disposable patch, which just sticks on the outside of that mask, pretty similar to a postage stamp, and then is wired to our reusable component, which has a built-in speaker to output the patient's actual voice so they can communicate with their care providers and loved ones.
So what was the genesis of your idea to start Ataya and to produce this product?
So it actually started as our senior design project at Georgia Tech in spring of 2017.
Wow.
So myself, as well as Tyler Register, our CEO, and Amber Jackson, our chief marketing officer, we were just undergrad students. And the way that Georgia Tech has structured their senior design program is they invite industry professionals in Atlanta to come in and pitch their problems. So that's how we were paired with Dr. Ian Wong, a critical care and pulmonology fellow at Emory, who had this issue he couldn't speak to about 30% of his patient population because they're all wearing this mask. So throughout the senior design semester, we found out that our prototype worked a lot better than we expected, and the problem was a lot bigger than Ian. So we decided to take this show on the road.
Wow. So I'll tell you that in the midst of COVID, as we all wear masks, I've noticed it's really hard to understand what people are saying, not just from the mask, but also because you don't have any context on reading lips. So if we look at your product and what you guys are doing with this, how big is the application for it, and how difficult is it for doctors if they can't hear the responses of the patients?
Right. So what we see is that there are there's a three times more likely chance for patients who can't communicate to experience a preventable adverse event. So there
Wow.
is this huge risk factor introduced when you have these patients that now can't communicate anything to you. And one of the original anecdotes Ian told us when he came to us with the project proposal was that they had a patient come into the ER in Atlanta. And They came in off the ambulance already wearing the mask. They were too they weren't stable enough to remove the mask and tell them what was wrong, and so they were processed through the ER and into the ICU, and only once they had stabilized in the ICU was it revealed that they were HIV positive. So you now have this bloodborne illness that is processed through triage, ER, ICU, with no safety protocols taken because they just didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really extreme case, of course, but in general, you can see how, like, just like you said, now that it's COVID and we're having more trouble communicating with these masks on, and those are just fabric masks, you can see how frustrated everyone is. So imagine now that mask is hard plastic and it presses against your face really uncomfortably and you just can't tell anyone what's wrong.
Let's talk about future plans for the company. Where do you see the company going in the next year, 5 years, or even 10 years?
So we think we're on the precipice of great growth. We're anticipating a really exciting 2020, and it has still been exciting, but we're thinking we'll see our great growth in 2021 because we started to place units in hospitals this year. So we're starting by placing the disposable in a wide net of hospitals and then really driving the purchase of the consumable once we have those disposables placed. And so that's going to be our big focus for the next year. Longer term, we're thinking the best route for us is an acquisition by a mask manufacturer, so someone like Philips or ResMed, Fisher & Paykel. Those are the three big players in the mask space. This is already a heavily commoditized market. You see all of these products that are really intended to improve patient comfort. They have, like, tubes you can put around the hose to keep the air warmer. They have humidifiers. They have different cushions you can attach. So it's all geared to improve patient comfort, and that's a huge play for us as well. So we've seen this as a successful pathway where the mask manufacturer will then come in and buy out the comfort improvement commodity and commercialize it as their own.
So it's really interesting to me as we talk about the product that this really does help stop adverse events in healthcare. That's an inefficiency that I think I'd never realized even happened in healthcare before. But this is an area that's sort of been, it's been known but not really talked about a lot along the process. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely fair. And, you know, in some way understandable, no one really wants to present like, hey, we're treating this many patients successfully, but also like we're having a negative event happen in X number of patients. Because I think the kicker is also really in the nomenclature. If you tell someone, oh, well, we had a preventable adverse event, it's like, well, why didn't you prevent it? But there are so many barriers. I can really only speak for our case specifically, but if the patient has no way to communicate to you, if their option is to pass out or say nothing, there's absolutely no way you can prevent that adverse event with the current standard of care.
So as you're going into production and trying to distribute product to hospitals, has the COVID quarantine and the focus on creating PPE, has this slowed down your production at all, or has it actually been potentially an asset?
So it hasn't slowed down our production at all. We're really fortunate to have some incredible production partners that have assured the supply chain is intact and safe and they can meet our demand. The biggest hit that we've taken as a result of COVID is we were just getting about a month into the sales cycle. It's a 3 to 4 month sales cycle. We were about a month in and suddenly we weren't allowed to enter the hospital anymore.
Wow.
So, and then there was about a 2 month adjustment period where everyone was like, we're not answering emails. We're just taking care of COVID patients. Please leave us alone. But we're seeing that change a little bit too. We're all settling into our current state of existence and we're seeing some better traction now that we're all acclimating to how it is now.
Very exciting. So let me ask you one final question, Amy, as we think about this. And I love your energetic perspective on all of this coming out of Georgia Tech and seeing, you know, the future runway on healthcare innovation. If you could snap your fingers and change just one thing about how we do healthcare in the U.S. from where you stand right now, what would it be?
I think the biggest thing that I found is I would like to see a shift in reimbursement strategy to be singular patient focused. So we saw a huge shift in reimbursement strategy with the Affordable Care Act, but it still made it such that doctors were getting reimbursed more on quantity of patients than quality of care for each patient. And that's through no fault of the doctor. Like I fully believe each doctor has the best intentions to provide the best care they can. But at the end of the day, you know, hospitals are businesses, they have quotas to meet, they have time slots to fill. And I think that's largely driven by our reimbursement structure. So I would like to see some reform in that area, de-emphasizing quantity of patients and emphasizing patient outcomes. And also some more objective structure, I'll say. I learned recently that 3M has developed a coding manual that is used by major payers in about 30 states. So there's obviously a conflict of interest there, right? Where 3M is then incentivizing the use of their own products in the reimbursement coding. So I'd really love to see that removed from the equation and the whole system refocused on patient outcome.
Amy, thanks very much. Great company, great invention, and looking forward to seeing the progress on this one.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Now let's talk to Dr. Lindsay Harper, who is a board-certified obstetrician-gynecologist and the founder and CEO of Rosie. She has numerous honors, including being named one of Forbes' top 53 women disrupting healthcare and People Newspaper's 20 Under 40. Lindsay, your company, Rosie, was the winner of the 2019 Healthcare Dealmakers Pitch Competition. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Bobby. I appreciate it.
So, Lindsay, tell us a little bit about Rosie and about what the company does.
Absolutely. So, in my role as an OBGYN, I would treat and see women whom I loved and cared for so much every day. And, you know, in residency, OBGYNs are taught to handle pregnancy, menopause, contraception, STIs. But one thing that we are not taught, which is shocking, is how to handle women's sexual dysfunction. And so I would have women in front of me, multiple women on a daily basis, you know, having problems with sexual desire, pain with sex, all kinds of arrays of problems. But I, unfortunately, was just not equipped to help them with these issues. And I realized, you know, that's not just a Lindsay problem. That's an across-the-board problem for OBGYN training. And so I went and sought more training through a medical society that's all they do is study women's sexual health, and realized that 43% of women have a sexual problem and there are evidence-based interventions for help. The gap is that because as physicians we aren't trained to treat these problems, then this information never gets to patients. And so I became very motivated and passionate about leveling the playing field, right? When you think of a man who has a sexual dysfunction, we all know that they go to see a urologist. We all know that there are more than 20 FDA-approved medications for men's sexual dysfunction. They're counseled about sexual side effects when they start a new medication. And I just really feel very strongly that the same attention should be given to women's sexual health. And that's what Rosie's all about. So Rosie connects women to evidence-based resources to help with sexual problems. And we not only do we appeal to directly to our consumers who are women everywhere, but also to their healthcare providers who are missing the training and, as Amy touched on, the time that's necessary to really help in a meaningful way. So that's what Rosie is.
So I'm amazed that if we have an issue where 43% of women are suffering from it, that it's not really addressed in med school, and this isn't something we typically teach to our OB-GYNs. How do we change that, and where do we go from here?
You know, that's a big part of my work and my passion is educating healthcare provider teams, so physicians, you know, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, residents, medical students, everyone across the board. I really feel that there's two steps in that. I mean, through my work, I give grand rounds across the country about women's sexual health and just try to distill it down to its most basic and approachable form, trying to give physicians the words that they need, the permission to talk to their patients about these things, and emphasize the importance of helping women in this way. But I really think that the longer term answer lies in residency education. You know, when I talk to urologists, they spend 50% of their time, right, treating men's sexual dysfunction in addition to, you know, other things in the urological tract for men. And I think that most people expect as an OBGYN that we're the corollary to that, but we're not, unfortunately. And so I think that there needs to be a major shift in training to incorporate this into all residency education programs. And so, you know, we're definitely taking steps in that direction. It's going to take a while, but we're working towards it for sure.
I think it's interesting how Rosie helps integrate across several healthcare specialties. This isn't just sexual health. It's also relational health, and it's probably dealing with the follow-on issues of depression and anxiety that come out of this, like behavioral disorders. Is that fair?
Absolutely. Yeah, we view women's sexual dysfunction, and probably all sexual dysfunction, but we really focus on women as a multidisciplinary issue, meaning it's not in a box, right? We all are whole people, and if we have a physical problem, it affects our mental health. If we have a mental health issue, it affects our physical health. And so we really value all pieces of that puzzle when it comes to education, self-help, what we in medicine call lifestyle modification, if it's a medication that's needed, or maybe some counseling or therapy. And so we really try to meet women where they are. We know that all women are very busy and overextended and committed. And so we're not trying to take, you know, hours out of your day, but maybe just minutes where you learn something new on the Rosie platform, where maybe you interact with another woman who has the same issue that you do for the very first time and realize that you're not alone and there's no reason to feel embarrassed or ashamed. Or, you know, maybe take the first step in scheduling a visit with a provider to talk about this and really work towards change. So we really are trying to approach it from all angles, just like you described, for sure.
That's great. What's the platform that Rosie's using to do it, and or how are you sort of advancing this? Is it educational tools for doctors or for women, or what's it look like?
Yeah, so basically Rosie is an app that you can download for free on your phone. And so whenever you have a few minutes, if you're in the carpool line or if you're in the bath at night, or maybe you've got a break between meetings, you can log on to Rosie, and the content is curated for whatever's going on with your particular situation. So when women first log into the app, they take a sexual wellness score, and this is based on standardized questionnaires that we use in medical offices for sexual dysfunction. And from that output, we curate their content. So then they're able to watch videos that pertain to their situation. So, for example, postpartum women would watch different content than menopausal women would. And so that's all very easy to interact with, low touch, low commitment. And then if users are finding value and they want to upgrade to premium content, they can do so for $10 a month. And that includes more in-depth self-help classes. Our most recent class that we launched is for cancer patients and sexuality, you know, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, cervical cancer, types of cancer that women face. Their oncologists, just like us OBGYNs, are not trained to talk to them about these issues. And you can imagine the stress that these women and their partnerships go through these ordeals. And they have nowhere to talk about it. They have no resources to ask for help. And many times they just have to struggle through it themselves. And so we heard from our users, you know, the first year after launch, hey, breast cancer survivors and survivors of other gynecologic and colon cancers need these resources. And so we partnered with an oncologist and a psychologist and made a self-help class. So there's resources like that that users can access that go a little bit more in-depth on a certain topic. And then we also have another evidence-based intervention for sexual dysfunction, particularly low desire, is actually reading erotica. So this is a fun, lighthearted way that users can explore that option in Rosie, and they're all short stories. There's no transactional history, so if a woman might be embarrassed or concerned, you know, about judgment on that, we keep that all safe and protected for her. So there's lots of different ways to use Rosie to understand yourself and your challenges that you're facing better. And physicians and other healthcare providers recognize that, you know, the interventions that we've chosen are based in data. And so they feel very comfortable after exploring the app, recommending it to their patients. Our current healthcare provider network is at 2,700. So that's how many sort of healthcare partners that we have that are recommending Rosie to their patients, and also now creating content for us. As our net gets wider, then, you know, we have much more provider generated content that we're able to then pass back along to our users. So it's really exciting.
That's great. And how long has the app been available?
Just about, let's see, 16 months in the App Store. So we launched on Valentine's Day of 2019.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, thanks.
So tell me about what the future plans are for Rosie. Where do you see the company going from a growth perspective over the next few years?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have users in all 50 states. We have requests internationally all the time, which we are
Wow.
excited to be able to answer that call, ASAP. The biggest thing that has happened in the past month for us is that, it's always been on our roadmap for Q2 of 2020, just so ironically, but we launched telehealth just recently for Texas specifically. So now our users who have, learned about what's going on through the educational and self-help content can also connect with sex therapists and also sex medicine doctors like myself. And actually continue to extend their care and that visit virtually. So we're super excited about rolling that out across the country, and just really, putting our stamp on women's sexual health, becoming recognized as the evidence-based sort of provider, created resource for all things women's sexual health, because we know how many women need these resources, and we're just excited, that they don't have to feel isolated or ashamed anymore.
I think it's excellent that you're taking on a taboo issue like this, or one that's sort of been pushed to the side, and then also recognizing that it's these sort of gaps between the specialists and between the training, right? The medical training, and that's what you're changing about this to make healthcare better for women on multiple levels.
Well, thank you.
So.
I feel super passionately about it, and I'm thrilled that, we're able to use Rosie as a case study where there are these huge gaps. There are opportunities to meet patients how they expect to be met in their everyday lives, and then also to offer yourself as a resource for physicians to save them time. So I think it's such an interesting, example and opportunity for other areas, not only in women's health, but across healthcare in general, where we can solve, to a double-sided problem really, and try to connect the gaps between patients and their healthcare team.
And you're probably improving marriages at the same time, right? Marriages and
Well, I
relationships.
certainly hope so. That's
Yeah.
what our users tell us. So I'm happy about that for sure. Because really, long-term relationships are a family issue, right? So it's not just about the woman
Right.
herself or the partnership. It's about the family. It's about, if these resources are available, women deserve to know about them, and they can decide what to do about them or not. But it's not in our best interest as providers to withhold or hide or be nervous to talk about these things with women. So I'm excited now to be able to be that conversation starter for sure.
That's awesome. So let me close with the final question and just ask if you could change one thing about how we do healthcare in the U.S., Dr. Harper, what would it be?
There's so many, when you're in the healthcare system, right? Like as a
Right.
physician, there's so many opportunities for improvement. I did appreciate Amy's sort of input about reimbursement. I think there's a lot of opportunity there. I would say that, my perspective through being a practicing physician and starting Rosie really lies in, patients have so many opportunities to gather information, and they do so from sources that aren't necessarily reliable. And I really feel like it's the healthcare system's obligation to understand how, healthcare consumers want to learn things, want to interact with things, and to make products that then in fact do that, right? And I think that we sometimes stand in medicine very staunch in our traditions and in the way we've always done things. And I think it's really important to continue to reimagine, if I'm a healthcare consumer, which we all are, whether we like it or not, like how do I want to approach this healthcare system? How do I want to learn and grow? Do I want to be, involved in all these visits at these big hospital systems all the time? Or do I prefer to decentralize it? And have medicine or this evidence-based information come to me. I think that's the answer. I think, it's some growing pains getting there, but I do think that it's possible, and it's something that we should all be working towards for sure.
That is great. Lindsay, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you, Bobby. I appreciate it.
So now let's turn to Maria Schneider, who's the co-founder and CEO of DynaFit. She's a biomedical engineer who's previously worked at NASA. I think that means that she's an actual rocket scientist. Fun fact, she loves entering into competitions of all kinds, and she has won competitions in ballroom dancing, bodybuilding, and martial arts. So watch out. Really cool. Maria, DynaFit was the winner of the 2017 Healthcare Dealmakers Pitch Competition. Dallas, really glad to have you with us today. And I'll tell you, those are some real serious fun facts.
Thanks, Bobby. So happy to be here with you.
So tell us about DynaFit and its primary product.
Okay. Well, first, I'd like to say that we are all on the same page, and I love listening to other entrepreneurs because we just recognize, I think people are really eager to understand and control their own health, and it's a huge gap that needs to be filled. So that's what DynaFit does. We develop tools that help people understand and control their own health and recovery for things that are musculoskeletal. So let me step back a second and talk about why I started this. I think it was actually destiny, because I'm a biomedical engineer and was not really applying that background in my life. And my son was born with cerebral palsy. So he's 14 now, and he's fine. Mm. He's doing great. But he's in a wheelchair, and his whole life we've been going to therapy, and it's been a process of trying to help him gain control over his muscles and really connect his brain to his muscles. So for those of you who don't know, CP is kind of like a stroke at birth. And so, you know, you don't get that normal connection to your muscles. So going to many, many appointments with him, we needed a better way to do this. Physical mm-hmm. therapists are wonderful, but you just can't spend enough time with them to really make it work. Physical therapy absolutely works, but you have to do it, and you have to do it at home. And my son is a kid. He doesn't want to do it at home. So what we developed is a little wearable sensor that anyone can stick over any muscle on their body, and it shows you what the muscle is doing on your cell phone. Literally, it shows you the muscle activation. So you have, from going for like my son or somebody with a stroke that is trying to reconnect and can't find a muscle, can't activate it, all of a sudden you can see it on your cell phone, and you can play games with it. You can have apps with it. So it gives you the feedback that you need. So that's where we started, and we've looked at all of the value that we can add in so many different cases. One of the ones that we're focusing on is post-knee surgery, because after a knee replacement, one of the main reasons that might fail and not turn out to be a positive outcome is having a very specific muscle called your VMO simply not start firing again. This is something that, you know, after the surgery, it's all kind of numb. You can't really tell whether you're using that muscle or a different muscle, but it has to happen for you to have a good outcome there. So we've done some research with the University of North Texas, and we appreciate them. Shout out to them. That has shown that we can put our sensor on that muscle and reliably, within one session, get that muscle going again, because the patient can see it. Instead of just trying to move the leg and not knowing if they're using another muscle, they can actually see it on the screen, and they can change the threshold and have lights and noises that tell them when they've made it. You can count reps. All of this goes on your cell phone. So this was something that we developed a few years ago, and that's what our company does.
When did you actually start production of this product? Because I think you've got the product out in at a number of sites now. Is that right?
We do. We're really excited about that. Let's see. It's been on the market a little less than 2 years because, you know, when you're inventing hardware from scratch, it's sort of a long process, you know, development and manufacturing and optimizing and FDA and all of those things, patents. So we came to the market a couple years ago, and we've really focused on finding research partners, and we have some great ones in a variety of different areas that are providing the evidence base since this is used in a clinic. But really, the end game, we really developed it for people like my son to take it home and still be under the care of a physical therapist, but get that advantage of being able to see what they're doing at home and start to take a little bit more control and responsibility for their own recovery.
So it gives the parents and or the person with the that's going through the physical therapy the ability to do really meaningful physical therapy when you're not having to go to a different location to do that, right? So you can actually do that at home under the watchful eye of a physical therapist who can determine whether you're motivating the right muscles. Is that fair?
That is absolutely fair. And I think COVID, in some sense, has really it's had an interesting effect because it has really matured the whole remote medicine and telemedicine market, and I think it's going to make a permanent impact for that. And I've always viewed this product as the basis of a really meaningful therapy, remote therapy platform, because it actually gives you that objective data about what your muscle is doing. And it doesn't just connect it to the therapist. It tells you exactly what you're doing. You can you know, see, are you getting stronger? You can record your sessions. How many reps did you do last time? And all that information is shared between you and your therapist. I think it can make it cheaper, more effective, better outcomes. Really excited about the opportunities that we're really seeing accelerating now.
What does production look like for you? It sounds like it's an app plus sensors that work together.
Exactly. So the hardware, it's interesting. Early on, we were told you can't be a hardware and a software company. You have to pick one. Well, you know, what you need is the hardware that goes to the software. So
right.
We're like, well, we have to do it all. So we've done all of our early apps and all of our hardware development was done early on in-house. And we have to go to an FDA manufacturer and, you know, to actually do the manufacturing of the case and assemble it and that kind of thing. But that's what we've done. And we've kept our manufacturing local. We're really happy about that.
That's great. Tell us what the next few years look like for the company.
Well, we're at a point where we have some of them being used on-site and have for long enough that we're now in generation 2 of our app. We have a game and the apps that connect to Android and iOS. And so now we're really looking for a partner that can help us reach a larger market. We want to be the sensor that connects to the therapy platform that really gives a competitive advantage about having some objective data for that platform. So we'd love to find a partner that deploys therapy across multiple states, is looking to put in place a remote platform. For one thing, I think this was fascinating to me. Only 9% of people that need physical therapy actually go to physical therapists. There is a huge, and that 9% constitutes a $27 billion market in the United States. 91% of that market is untapped. And I think it's because it is so cumbersome to go to therapy. You have to go multiple times. You don't know how much it's going to cost. Putting this on a remote platform in connection with a therapist, I think, is a huge opportunity. And that's what we want to take advantage of. We want to find a partner to work with to do that because our little device is unique in the market and can give a competitive edge. It's kind of the basis of that.
I had a sports injury a number of years ago, and I remember being told by my doctor about physical therapy and then looking at it, and my response was, hey, I have a job, right?
Right?
Are you kidding me?
That's
I have a
right.
job.
Exactly.
I mean, when am I going to do this, and, like, how many days are you talking about? And I want to get better, but I can't basically make this my life for the next few months every, you know, 3 days a week or whatever. If you told me that I could do this in the evenings or early mornings or that I could do it on the weekends, oh, my gosh, that would completely change the nature of physical therapy in the U.S.
You could do it at work because you're always getting that, you know, right to your cell phone. You can do it anywhere. You could do it on the train on the way home. I mean, it really – it's just a game changer. And if somebody had told you at that time, Bobby, this is going to cost you $1,000. We're going to schedule 12 appointments for you, but – 10 of them are going to be at home, you know, in your free time, but we're watching over your shoulder, so you got to do it. We're going to send this device home with you. I'm guessing you probably, would you have taken them up on that?
Absolutely. I'm also thinking I can do it while I'm recording podcasts, just for the moment. But the,
We'll have to turn off the noise, right? The
right.
cheering noise, yay, when you do your rep.
But it's really interesting to me. It's not often that I hear about a 91% on tap market. And one of the themes that we think about at the Health BizCast is always that if you focus on improving patient outcomes and patient care, then we think you come up with lots of ideas and potential companies and products that can be commercially successful and at the same time create a public good and make healthcare better. And so that's really exciting. And wow, that is that is virgin territory. I mean, to think about the an untapped 91% market is amazing to me. So
that was amazing to me too. I got really excited about that.
Yeah, no doubt. So as we close this part of the interview, let me ask you the same question I've asked a couple of our other guests. So if you could change one thing about U.S. healthcare, what would it be?
It would be that somehow the patient is actually on their own care team as opposed to being kind of pushed around in a way by healthcare providers, insurance companies, et cetera, that they actually understood what their own health situation was. They were able to understand the metrics they get from testing. They were able to make good choices based on some understanding of what's going on, because I truly believe that given more control, they would take more responsibility. And I think we all need to do that for our own health. I would love to see that.
That is great. Thank you, Maria. And I'll tell you a great personal story regarding your son, and a redeeming story at that. So thank you for your vulnerability on that piece.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay, so I'm going to open it up to audience questions. And while we're waiting to see if any come in, I thought I might open it up to our three guests today in case you had any questions for each other. As three entrepreneurs who have got companies on this. And I've got a few questions as well, but if anyone wants to ask something, feel free. While we're looking for a second on this, Amy, you were the only one that of the group here that did a virtual pitch competition instead of one in person. Right, because it was this year. And I'd love to know what you thought about the experience of doing a pitch competition virtually versus in person, and what that's like. It makes my heart pump a lot faster to think about all of the technical aspects and everything else that have to go into that. It was easy for me because I was on the other side of the presentation, right? But but for you, I'd love to know.
Yeah, going into it, I wasn't very nervous. I mean, I was excited by the idea of getting to wear slippers while giving a pitch. that sounded pretty fun to me. So, and I was really curious to see how the event would go overall. I only really got nervous about the technical portion when I watched one of the other competitors end up giving a pitch without a deck because their screen sharing didn't work. So that made me a little nervous, but he did a great job, even with the lack of pitch deck. And it's not the first virtual pitch I've given. We cast a pretty broad fundraising net. We tried to look a little bit all over the country. So I had some prior experience in doing the pitch over Zoom. But it was definitely different, but I ultimately really enjoyed it. I liked the format. I liked that they still gave the judges the opportunity to ask face-to-face questions. Didn't let you get out of that too easily. So yeah, I ultimately really enjoyed the experience.
That's great. Thank you. All right. Well, we don't have audience questions right now. And as I told everybody at the beginning, our goal for the Health BizCast is we'll edit everything down to 10 minutes of content for each guest anyway. So I think, unless some of you have questions for each other, we're about ready to conclude. All right.
That sounds good. So, thanks so much for the opportunity.
Thanks to all three of you for being with us. This has been very enjoyable. So I will close us out by saying that this podcast will be posted in full on the Healthcare Dealmakers website and on Pulcinelli's website probably in the next few days. For the 10-minute Health Bizcast itself, we'll be editing the content so that there are three episodes, one for each of the companies we've talked to today, and those will come out later in the summer as part of album 2 of the Health Bizcast, probably as tracks 2, 3, and 4. For the healthcare dealmakers digital experience, this is part of that experience today. The next event will be an HDC market update on July 30th, which we're currently putting together, and you'll see more information on that shortly. We then have a virtual fireside chat in September with the keynote speaker we had lined up when the conference was actually happening in person. When we moved to virtual, we decided to move the keynote to a virtual fireside, and we're very excited about that. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Thank you to our guests. Thank you to the team that's helping produce all of this and to our executive producer, Jim Mathis. This concludes today's live podcast.
This has been a live session of the 10-Minute Health Bizcast, broadcasting from Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks very much for joining us.